Good evening. Good evening. Hey, I'm Sam. I help lead the student stuff here. Thanks, girl. Oh, stop. That's a cheer for the student stuff here, not for the Sam bit. First of all, can I just say, like, if I ever need to get fired up, I'm just going to look at the way Amber stares off into the distance, and that just gets me going, it's just so mean. Anyway, we are on week two of our series, Welcome to the Resistance, and I want to start by asking you a question. This isn't a preacher-atorial question, this is a genuine question. So, what do you think is the most valuable and fought-after commodity in the world today? Someone give me an answer. Time, interesting. Anybody else? Very metaphysical.
Gold
over that side.
Water.
Water, an interesting, the geopolitical answer. I want to argue that the most fought after commodity in the world today is your attention. It's your attention. The most valuable thing in the world today is your attention. In hundreds of years ago, it would have been the gold rush, and gold was the thing that everyone needed and fought after. Then came oil, and we have wars over oil and all this sort of stuff. But now, in the age of Silicon Valley, of big tech, of Facebook and Google, it is your attention. All these huge companies, some of the biggest that have ever existed, were built not selling physical products, but literally selling you and your attention. And I wonder, have you thought about it that way before? Have you ever thought about how valuable your attention is? If you were alive in the gold rush and you had all this gold, you wouldn't just be completely fine with anyone coming and grabbing your gold, and you wouldn't just be throwing it around anywhere. You would think about it because it's a valuable commodity. And yet we walk around today, and everywhere there is something trying to grab your attention. And chances are, if it's flashing in neon, or if there's a bit of skin showing, we'll probably give our attention to it. That's just what we do. We walk around and everything around us, we just immediately get distracted and give that thing your attention. And so what we have is some huge companies, like I said, who have built their whole product not on selling something to you. Because we don't buy Instagram. We're not paying £20 a month to be on Instagram. But instead have made their billions with you as the product, with your attention, your data, your advertising space as the product. And this should make us ask a question of how do we live in this environment? We call this whole world of kind of this huge industry who are trying to fight over your attention, we call it the attention economy. And it's one of the most powerful things in our world today. And what I want to do tonight is focus, especially because there are so many things that grab our attention. And it might be for you that it's a whole bunch of different things. It might be your work email. You just constantly keep on checking it. It might be, I don't know, Netflix. One thing that we're really going to focus in on tonight is social media. And I'm not focusing on it because in some way I'm like a Luddite or something. I'm actually talking to you tonight as someone who would say, honestly, my attitude, my use of social media isn't as healthy as I would like it to be. And so I'm not here just to completely bash it from the start, but I want to ask the question, how do we handle it well? And what does the Bible have to say about it? Now, obviously, Paul wasn't writing. The guy we're going to look at is a guy called Paul. He was writing letters to churches just after Jesus came. And we're going to look at one of his letters that he wrote to Rome. Now, we're not going to find his kind of top tips for how to deal with TikTok or anything like that in his book of Romans. But there's a really healthy and helpful kind of theory that we can take, an idea that we can then apply to the world of the attention economy. So we're going to read through Romans 12 together. This is exactly the same passage that we read last week and we'll be focusing on for the series. And it says this, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Do not be conformed do not conform to the pattern of this world. What Paul's writing about here is these patterns of the world, the way the world functions, the things that make the world work, the institutions, the things we have in society that tell us this is just the way it's done. And for us, social media and the whole attention economy idea is a pattern of the world. You can't really exist today, look around in modern Bristol and say that social media isn't having a huge impact on the pattern of our world, not just for us as individuals, but as a society. In fact, the first president of Facebook, a guy called Sean Parker, you'll know him as Justin Timberlake in the Social Network film, if anyone's watched that, the guy who took the Facebook and changed it to Facebook, he says this about Facebook itself. God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. The thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible. The social media platforms have been developed, designed with the intention of saying, how do we take as much of your attention as possible? How do we take more and more and more and more? And the more attention we get, the wealthier we become. This is a pattern of the world. Now, for many of us, we say that Facebook, it's just a tool, it's just something that I use, it's just a tool that I have. But actually, Paul, I think, would say something very different. Because if we go back to what he's saying in Romans, he uses a specific language. He says, do not conform to the pattern of this world. And that word, do not conform, Philip explained last week to us that it's not an active word. It's not a choice necessarily that we're making. It's not like we wake up and start the day saying, tonight I'm going to lie in bed from 11 till 2 a.m. scrolling through TikTok. That is the choice that I've made to conform to this pattern. Actually, it does sound kind of nice, and that's the problem, isn't it? Actually, Paul says that when he's talking about do not conform, this is a passive tense. I don't know. If you're an English literature student, I think it's passive participle, or maybe something like that. The idea basically is it's something that's happening to you. That when he says do not conform, he's saying there are patterns in the world, there are pressures and the way society is built that will happen to you, and they will conform you, and they will push you into a shape and make you into a certain way. In this instance, they will conform you into someone who gives as much of your time and attention to social media as possible, unless you make the active decision to say, I'm going to stand against that. We say welcome to the resistance because we believe there are areas in our life where we have to make that active decision to say, I want to live differently. So the question is, how are we conformed to this pattern? Because we all know, to be honest with you, most of us, if we're honest with ourselves, I know for me certainly, I'll be using social media, whatever, and I know I don't really want to check my phone right now, but for some reason, I've compulsively reached into my pocket and grabbed it. And I know I don't want to keep on scrolling up and up, and yet for some reason, I keep on doing it. So the question is, how is this happening? How are we conformed? Well, again, our friend Sean Parker goes on and explains that when there is this pattern of the world of giving more and more of your attention to social media, the way they do this is kind of simple. It's something called social validation. Turn to your neighbor and say, social validation. You have engaged in social validation. You are validating each other as social beings. You're telling each other that you want to talk, you want to be connected. That is what we're made for. And Sean Parker goes on and he talks about this stuff. He says, and that means if we're going to create this pattern of this world, this attention economy, that means we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content. And that's going to get you more likes and comments. It's a social validation feedback loop. Exactly the kind of thing a hacker like myself would come up with because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. The guy who was kind of right at the start of creating social media, creating this pattern of the world, says that social media is exploiting something in our human psychology, something in the way that we're made. We as Christians, if you're not here, you're not a Christian, really encourage you. We heard about Alpha. Go explore, ask the big questions. One thing that we believe is that we as humans are created for connection. It says in the Bible that when God made Adam, that was good, but actually it wasn't okay just for Adam to be on his own. He needed someone with him. Why? Because we're made for connection. We're made for community. More than that, we're made for social validation. We're made to make each other feel good. We're made to tell each other what we think and help each other and support one another. And this is something that's deep within our psychology, and yet social media conforms us to a pattern where we give more and more of our time by doing what Sean Parker says, which is hacking into this. He says that when you go on Instagram and someone gives you a like or a comment, or when you're in WhatsApp and you've sent a little joke and everyone's buzzing, everyone's loving it, the banter's flying, that is social validation. People are saying, yeah, you're good. You're so good, you get this many likes. You're so good, you have this many followers. You're so good that every time you get that, you get a little dopamine hit. Now, dopamine is a powerful hormone that just courses through you. So whenever you see that you've got a DM or a like, whatever, you get a little buzz of dopamine. And this is highly, highly addictive for our bodies. And so we keep coming back for more and more and more. The second way that social media conforms us to a pattern which says we should give more of our time and attention to it is that it does something called, and I can't remember what it's called, it is variable schedule rewards. There it is, variable schedule rewards. It's a weird one, isn't it? A hard one to say. Now, you don't really need to know exactly why it's called this. All I need you to think about is a slot machine. Okay? Think of a slot machine. Did you know? I found this out the other week. It blew my mind. Slot machines are worth more than theme parks, the movie industry, and baseball combined. It's incredible. I know. Thank you, Matt. I mean, I thought it was amazing. Me and Matt both think that's amazing. And one other person whistled over there in a way to suggest they also thought it was amazing. And the reason is because they're highly addictive. Do you know you're more likely to get addicted to a slot machine 2 to 3 times quicker than any other form of gambling, because it taps into something incredibly primal about us. Again, this is how it works. A slot machine, you pull a lever, and that feels good. You pull a lever, and suddenly, every single time you pull a lever, something pops up. Something starts moving. And then sometimes you win, jackpot, money, exactly. And then sometimes you lose, it doesn't work. But you can come back a minute later, put your coins in, pull the lever, and then every time something comes up, do I win, do I lose? Apparently this process of I do something, it instantly happens, and randomly I might win or I might lose is incredibly addictive for us. It taps into something which we just can't get enough of. And so when you go onto Instagram, you press the Instagram logo and it's like pulling the lever on a slot machine. And suddenly it pops up Instagram, and have you won? Have you got likes, comments, DMs? Are people enjoying what you're putting out? Have you got new stories to watch? Or actually, have you lost because you only checked it 2 minutes ago and literally nothing has changed? It doesn't matter, because if you win, great, get that dopamine hit. If not, if there's nothing new for you to look at, fine, we'll come back a minute later because we just want to keep on going. This is so powerful that Facebook, Twitter, Instagram changed the way a few years ago that their app works. That instead of pressing a refresh button, you literally slide down as if you're pulling a slot machine. All this to say, social media in particular, but so much of our world, Netflix, email, all these things that actually can drain our attention, even, dare I say, BBC News, are created, I know, not Auntie Beeb, are created in a way to keep us coming back for more and more. They're created to conform us to a pattern of this world that says you need to give more of your time and energy. Now, we might say, what does that matter really? Like, let's be honest, we're millennials, we're Gen Z, we're all, a lot of us, kind of addicted. But it's fine. It's all good. I've learned to live with it. It's just, you know, it's part of being a young person today, right? Is that you use social media all the time. It's what we do. We're kind of okay with the fact that we'll be on it around our friends. We've kind of got past that. It's all good. What does it matter? Well, actually, we can go back and read what Paul is writing in Romans to understand why how we think about social media and how it changes our thoughts matter quite so much. Let's read Romans 12 again. It says this, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." Philip taught us last week that Paul is urging us to live our lives as a living sacrifice, to give everything we've got, to put it all on the line to follow Jesus. And that makes no sense whatsoever if we don't think a certain way about God. If it's just a call with nothing else behind it to say, go, give everything you've got, none of us are going to do it. We're not going to live that way. But Paul says it's in view of God's mercy. It's when we have a view of God's mercy. It's when we understand how good he is, how loving he is, how kind he is. Again, you can find all this stuff out on Alpha, but we think God is incredible and he loves us and he's merciful. When we understand that, when we think about God that way, it changes how we live. Suddenly, we want to give our lives as a sacrifice. We want to give everything we have to follow him. Because what we learned last week is the way that you think determines how you live. How you think about God, do I understand him as merciful and as good, determines how we live. Will I give everything to follow him? And the same can be applied to all the different things we're going to look at in this series: materialism, individualism, sex, and social media. How we think about these things and how these things change our thinking will determine how we live. See, the problem is when we are conformed to a pattern of this world, our thinking becomes conditioned. Our thinking is conditioned. What I want to do is just look at the three main areas that I believe social media is conditioning our thinking and ask, what is the impact on that? How does that change how we live? The first one, how you think about yourself determines so much about how you live. How do you think about you? In particular, your health. Now we know, I'm sure many of us here have heard of all different stats and things like that about the difficulties, the dangers of social media for our mental health. And for some of us in that room, that'll be a real experience that we've had. Actually, we know we've, especially in the last year and a half, been using social media, and we know it's not had a great impact on our mental health. So I don't want to go on with loads and loads of stats, but just this literally came out a few weeks ago. Facebook did an internal study because they wanted to basically find out, okay, how bad actually is Instagram in particular, but also Facebook. And they didn't want the results to be released to anybody. But they were hacked, and now we have them. So here you go. Not just us. Everyone has these results. But I know. I learned to hack just to bring you this hot off the press information. Thank you. Yeah. And if the FBI is watching, which we know they are, you know, social media. Ooh. Okay. But I need to change tone here, because actually these are some really, really sad stats. They released, this is Facebook's own stuff, they found that 40% of those who reported feeling unattractive could trace that thought directly back to social media. 13% of people who have thought about harming themselves traced that thought of self-harm directly back to using Instagram. And that's not everyone who has thought about harming themselves but hasn't realized that it's social media that is having this impact. This is just the people who know it's because of social media that I have those thoughts. We could go, there are so many examples of the challenges that it poses for our health, but it all comes down to this. Social media changes how we think about ourselves. And when it changes how we think about ourselves, it changes how we live. It changes our mental health. The Bible tells us that God created you in his image. That is what he wants you to know. That he said it in his Bible so you would know you're loved and you're created in his image. And yet, social media conditions our thinking, changes the way we think, and tells us, I'm not good enough. I don't match up compared to that influencer or that person. All my friends are out having a good time without me. And our thinking becomes conditioned until it shows itself in how we live. Social media can condition our thinking and change our mental health. The other thing that it can impact massively is our community. How you think about your community has been conditioned by social media. It tells us that we are connected to everybody at all times, that we can be connected to friends around the world, that we can have a Zoom call with anybody at any time, we can FaceTime people and be connected to them, which to a certain extent is true. But the problem is social media has changed our way of thinking about community so that we don't have that healthy appreciation of the people right next to us. How many of us, we know we've done this, we've been in a cafe or in a pub, and your mate WhatsApps you, and while you're with someone else, you decide, oh, I'll just reply to him real quickly, sorry, 2 seconds. And what we're saying in that moment is, my friend who's not here, who will get this WhatsApp message at some time in the future, deserves my attention more than you do. And the problem is that it's having a profound impact on our understanding of community. There's another study done by a lady called Jean Twenge, with a lovely surname, who found that the date that most people in America and Britain owned a smartphone, the date that it ticked from some people have it to most people have it, is 2012. That's when kind of the game changed. And what we find is that some stats around things like loneliness kind of were ticking along, going up and down for decades. And then 2012 comes, and it's staggering. Loneliness just shoots up all of a sudden. She does a study about she looks at teenagers, how many teenagers are going out and spending time out of the house with their friends. And it ticks along, ticks along, ticks along, and then it gets to 2012, and it plummets down. And so now, as we come out of the pandemic, so many of us are seeing the effect of trying to replace real community with online community, that for a while it was helpful in a certain aspect, but it's not the same, because actually many of us feel lonely and disconnected. The stats around loneliness are worse than they've ever been before, and by a paradigm shift. The way we think about community has been changed, conditioned, and that determines how we live, how we do community. Finally, the way that you think about God is conditioned by social media. Did you know that in 2000, the average attention span was 12 seconds? Now, we're most of the way into the talk now, so your attention span is being really tested. It's okay, I know, it's a dark room. Some of you, Freshers Week, I know it's been a big one, but your attention span used to be around 12 seconds. 20 years later, our attention span is down to 8 seconds. Guys, we lost 4 seconds somewhere. The attention span of a goldfish is 9 seconds. We're being beaten by a goldfish. This isn't good news. And actually, it's funny, you know, oh, we're so distracted. But actually, it has a massive impact on our relationship with God. How many of us have said, I feel like my prayer life isn't what I want it to be. I try and pray, I try and sit down, but honestly, my mind goes wandering. How many of us have been saying, right, I'm going to read my Bible in the morning, and you start, but actually, it's kind of just more interesting to watch YouTube while you're eating your Cheerios. It's there, your phone's right there. How many of us say that we feel disconnected from God? Maybe the problem isn't at his end. Maybe it's ours. I wonder if the big scheme of the enemy, of the devil, for our generation, millennial and Gen Z, is not to send us with big malignant forces of evil and huge shows of whatever, but simply that the plan of the devil for our generation would be to distract us, to keep us so distracted that we can't keep our eyes on Jesus and follow him. The Bible has a word for this. It talks about it all the time throughout the Bible when our attention is more focused on something instead of God. It calls it idolatry. It says that when you give your attention and your worship to something before God, you are committing idolatry. In Psalm 16, verse 4, the guy who writes this poem says that they run after gods, and those who run after gods will suffer more and more. Many of us are so distracted running after gods, we don't even realize it, of checking a work email or watching another episode of Netflix or checking Instagram. We don't realize that we're running after something instead of God, and it promises us that we will suffer more and more. An American writer once said, "Anything, you should worship God, because anything else you worship will end up eating you alive." For many of us, that's our experience with social media, is we should be focusing our attention on God. Instead, we're focusing on it, on social media, and it's eating us alive. So what do we do? What is the answer? How do we live out the resistance? How do we live defiantly? Does Paul say, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but run away and live in the desert? Because right now, that might be what you feel like doing. Do you say, don't be conformed to this pattern of this world, but throw your phone into Bristol Harbour? Because actually, maybe that's the easy answer, right? Maybe we should all go to the harbour after church and just throw our phones in, and we'll be like a little hermit community in the middle of Bristol, the weird guys, like an Amish enclave in the middle of the city centre. What does Paul say the answer is? He tells us to not be conformed. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It's not a case of running away. It's not a case of just pretending none of this exists. We want to be part of the world. We want to participate in society. We want to be in all of these places. Instead, it's a matter of having the way we think, our very minds, renewed. Remember I said that for many of us, we don't look after our attention. We don't treat it as the valuable thing that it is. Well, Paul, later in another letter that he wrote, this time to a church in Philippi, says this. He says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things." What Paul's saying to us is you can control, you can think about, you have an element of control over what you think about, over where your attention goes. We have the ability to change things, to do things differently in such a way that instead of focusing our attention on something that we don't want to, we can put it towards things that are good, that are noble, that are pure, that are lovely, that are admirable. And so I want to suggest three ways, and this is the last few minutes as we come into land, three ways we can do this. And this isn't some long checklist that things you have to do, because actually it's going to be better if you just work this out for yourself, if you come up with some ideas of what is really going to help you be more healthy in this area. But some three things that we can take forward, big ideas from the life of Jesus, because he was a guy who constantly had people looking for his attention. Wherever he went, people were grabbing him. Come heal my daughter, come heal my son, come teach. Don't, like, having arguments with Pharisees. All these different people were desperate for his attention. So what did he do? First of all, he would stop. He would stop. He would go away from the craziness, purposefully withdraw himself and say, I'm going to spend time by myself in silence and solitude. I'm going to choose to withdraw. I'm going to put a limit on how much of this craziness I can take. For many of us, that's what we need to do. We just need to work out, where do I need to stop? What is my limit? And that could be a time thing. That might be that you don't look at your phone from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. That might be that you just have a couple of hours in the week or a day in the week when you turn off social media. That might be that you put time limits on your apps that you know you use the most. But all of us need to work out, where am I unhealthy? What is sucking my attention? And how can I stop? The second thing we can do is to stay connected. Jesus, when he had all of his disciples, all of the followers, thousands of people wanting his attention, he continually chose to be connected to the people around him, specifically his 12 closest friends. And the challenge for us is, in a world where we can access anyone at any time, when there is so much at our fingertips, when the whole world is out there for us, can we make the continual decision to be connected to a community right here? Can we choose to invest our time and our attention in the people who are by our side? For us, the main way that we do this at Metro is in our hubs. There are small groups that meet around the city. And we do this regularly every single week because we believe that it's really important that no matter what's going on, the craziness of our world, that we choose to pay attention to our community right next to us. So if you are a young professional here, then the EuroPro hubs are up and running. If you live in Bedminster, come and chat to me. The Bedminster Massive, the best hub going, just saying. If you are a student, you're also my people. This is great. Come this Tuesday, we have our hub launch up at Woody Central. We're going to be starting our small groups up again. And that is a place where you can find a community where you can stay connected. And finally, we can start. We can start our day with worship. This is what Jesus did. Before the madness of the crowds and everything out there, before all the things were trying to take his attention, he would routinely go off before everyone else was awake and spend time with God, worshiping him. And I want to tell you that worship is the most powerful weapon that we have when it comes to this stuff. Because you know what happens when we worship? When we choose to spend our time adoring God and saying what we think are incredible about him, whether that's in music or whatever, we choose to say to ourselves and to God that you are more important than anything else going on around me. That my work emails can wait because you are more important. That I haven't checked my phone yet, but you are more important. And so maybe one thing that you might want to do, this is, for me, the biggest change that I've made in my faith life, and it's embarrassingly tiny, but it's made such a big difference to my life over the last few months, is I don't check my phone, or I try not to, before I spend time with God. And it seems so stupid, but there's something about it saying, you're my first priority, you're the thing that I want to focus my attention onto, that it changes it. And what actually happens when we worship, when we focus on God, is our brain rewires itself, that we literally physically change the neural pathways of our brain in worshiping God to say, if that's my where my attention should be. Paul puts it really, really well in the Message translation of this passage. And I'll finish with this. Read this because it's amazing. This is a paraphrase. It says, don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. Choose to worship him. Start your day worshiping God and you'll be changed from the inside out. What happens when we do this, when we stop, we put limits on things, when we stay connected, and when we start by worshiping God above all else, is that we're changed from the inside out. So we don't have to run away. We don't have to become an Amish enclave. Instead, we can be people that are transformed by the renewing of our mind from the inside out. So here's our big idea this week. We say that social media conforms our thinking, takes our attention, and can affect our mental health, connection with others, and faith. We can renew our minds by stopping our usage, staying connected, and starting our day with worship. Cool. I'm going to invite the band up. We're going to do exactly that. We're going to start and finish tonight with a time of worship where we can focus our attention on God. But I'd love it if you could stand with me, because I'd love to pray for a few people here tonight. Let's all stand together. And I know we're all going to be in different places. I was trying to talk to my wife Hannah about this, but she just doesn't use social media ever. So it's impossible to like bounce any ideas off because she's literally never had any of it. Really not helpful. But we'll all be in different places. And for some of us, this is just something that we want to tweak. For some of us, actually, we might say, I'm a bit more in the category of, I feel like my use of social media is unhealthy. compulsive, maybe even addictive. I know from my experience that the thing that's really helped me to move out of a place of addiction and unhealthy habits has been what we call confession, where we say to people around us, actually, I'm struggling here. Could you pray for me? And so that's what we're going to do now. And I'm going to start by saying, actually, I need help here. I know I'm not in the best place with this stuff. And I'd encourage anybody else here that wants to say, okay, I want to make a change now. Would you raise your hand with me? And I'd love just to pray for you guys. Thank you. Amazing. And guys, this is an act not just to say, you know, a one-time thing. Actually, we believe that the power of prayer can change our thinking here. And so, God, we pray for all of us here that have our hand up, that say we want to grow healthier in our approach to using social media, to where we give our attention. God, we want to ask, would you change our thinking? Would you renew our minds? Would you transform us? The power of your Spirit, would you break any chains of addiction here now? Would you lead us into a healthier place with you? In Jesus' name, amen.